All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Samachay Mudbet. The Mishnah mentions that after we have what's called Raglaim Ladavar, the individuals already had two sightings of Ziva, we no longer pay attention to the normal factors that would tell us that this isn't a Ziva, or that we blame the Zav, the emission, on something else besides a flow of Ziva. So at the end of the Mishnah, it says, Mishniskak, the Ziva, once he's already become a Zav, ain't bodkim oto. We don't check him anymore. Onso, usveko, v'shichvat zaro, tmeim. In that instance, whether it happened by some other external stimuli, or whether it is a safek, or whether it's shichvat zera, all of those generate tuma, and are the equivalent of a normal sighting of Ziva. Shuralaglaim the Devar, because you have circumstantial evidence which indicates that he has been citing Zav, or he's been having these Zavi missions, and that this too is also a Zavi mission. Now the Gemara wants to understand what are these cases of Unsos Feko. Amarova, Lotema Safek Chaza, Safek Lochaza. When we say that it's a Safek here, don't say that means a Safek whether he saw it or he didn't see it, because in that instance he probably would be Tahor, because there's a safek if he ever had any emission at all. Ela badai chaza. The safek here is that he definitely saw safek machmat shichvat zera, safek machmat ri'iyah. But the question is, did he see shichvat zera or did he see a zav emission? Kevin shenizkak l'tuma. Once already he's deemed to be a zav because he's had multiple zav emissions already, sfeko tamei. Then we assume that the emission that he's seeing now, or what he's seeing now, is Ziva and not Shechvat Zera. The way that the Mefarish explains it is, the question here is, did he see it because of Shechvat Zera? Or did he see it because it was just a Zav emission? We consider it to be irrelevant. Had it been at the beginning of his process of Tumah, then we would have said, well, if it's a Safek because of the Shechvat Zera is one of those things that makes him not a Zav, but rather just Tamei Tumat Erev for Shechvat Zera. But now that he's already fully into the process of Zav emission, we no longer pay attention to the fact that there's a possibility that this is because of Shechvat Zera, not because of the Zav emission. And we assume that there's a Zav emission. The way that the Tosafot explains it, Perish Ri, that it makes a difference here what was emitted because of the way that it is soter, which is that here we have a case where it's shichvat zera mixed together with ziva. And if that was the case, if he had a sighting of zav and shichvat zera together, if he's counting his shiva nikiim, that would only be soter yom echad. It only is oker one day, he gets tahor from the shichvat zera, and then he continues with his shiva nikiim. But if it was ziva, plain ziva, without any shichvat zera mixed in with it, that would be soter, the entire shiva nikiim. So that's the question here, which is, Rabba Meiri, k'yon shibadak atzmo, matza shichvat zera, v'gam ziva labeged. So here he checks himself, and he sees that he has both shichvat zera and ziva. The question is, how did that come about? V'lo no da, imba ziva labada v'shichvat zera labad. Did it happen that each one was an independent emission, and now he'd be oker 7 days, meaning that he'd ruin his shiva nikiim, he'd have to start over again? Or was it the case that they were emitted together, that there was a mixture of ziva and shichvat zera that were emitted together, and that would only cause him a delay, a suspension of 1 day during his shiva nikiim? So Tosafot sees this fake here as being that there is both shichvat zera and ziva here, and we're trying to figure out what transpired. Were they admitted together? Because in that case, it would only be soter 1 day of a shiva nikiim. Or were they admitted separately, where then he would have to restart his whole count of the 7 days? The Rosh over here at the bottom of the Amud, the Rosh gives another explanation. Mefarshim, safek machmat shichvat zera perush, safek imra shichvat zera tchila, v'tibat ziva ba achar kach. What's the order? Did he see shichvat zera first and then the ziva, which in that case, the ziva would not be mitama, as we're going to see in the upcoming in the daf, that we see shechvat zera first and then ziva afterwards, we discount the Zava Mishnah because it came after the Shechvat Zera? Or was the case here where he had the Ziva sighting first, and then only afterwards did he have the Shechvat Zera sighting, and then would make it into a full sighting of Ziva? So that's the question here, is the terms of, he knows he's seen both of them. Question is, what was the order of what he saw? So in all these cases, what you're seeing here is that the Safek that Rava is pointing out is that this is not a Safek of yes or no. We already have something in front of us. And the question is, what do we have in front of us? And there's the Safek derives from that, whether according to the Mefaresh, whether it was a Safek, whether it was Shechvat Zera, Ziva, according to the Tosafot, was it a mixture or was it separate? According to the Rosh, what was the order of the emission? But those Sfeikot already captured by the fact that he's already Nizgak the Tumah. He's already a Zav who is Tameh. And because of that, that will color the way that we view the Sfeik now. And that is that we will say Sfeiko Tameh. We'll assume the worst. Which is, we'll assume, according to Mifaresh, if it was a question between Shechvat Zera and Zav, we'll assume it was Zav. If, according to Tosfot, was it a mixture or was it separate, we're going to assume that it was separate. And according to the Rosh, we will assume that the Ziva came before the Shechvat Zera, because that will have the maximum impact. All right, Shechvat Zerot Me'ah. The Mishnah says over here, Onso Sfeiko V'Shechvat Zerot Me'im. What does it mean that a Shechvat Zera is Tameh? Now, Shechvat Zera is not Ziva. So when you say that Shechvat Zero is Tmeiah, what is the meaning of that statement? So the Gemara says, Lamai, what does it mean that Shechvat Zero is Tameh? If you're telling me that if you come into contact with the Shechvat Zero, now that you are Tameh, Mi gara mi Shechvat Zero de Tahor. That's not anything unique to a Zav. That's true of anybody who has a seminal emission, that the emission itself, if you come into contact with it, would be Tameh, because ish asher tzitze mimenu shechvat zera, and the Gemara over there says, oh, there are both et anogeya. So that, oh, over there tells you that even if you come into contact with it, then you are Tameh. Ela, zaro shel zav mitameh b'masa. This is the unique quality of the shechvat zera of the zav, which is not only mitameh b'maga, when you come into contact with it, but masa, even if you carry it, then you also be Tameh, which would be a derivative of a zav. The liquids of a Zav convey Tuma, and they convey Tuma both with Magav and Masah and additional ways as well. But here, Shechvat Zera then will be elevated to a higher level of Tuma. So not only will it have the normal Tuma that's associated with Shechvat Zera of Magav, now have an additional dimension of Masah because it was a Zav who had a Shechvat Zera emission. Zaman Shmayit Laha, Damar Shechvat Zera Zel Zav Mitameh B'Masah. Where do we have a Tana that ever states that Shechvat Zera has this Tumat Masa? Ilei Mahaitanu. If you want to say it's based on this, Machloket Tanaim, the Tanya. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Shechvat Zero Shel Zav Enu Mitameh B'Masa. So Shechvat Zera is only Mitameh B'Maga, not B'Masa, only when you come into direct contact with it, not when you carry it. Rabbi Shua Omer, Mitameh B'Masa. Rabbi Shua says, it's even Mitameh through Masa, the fee. She'ef Sherla, below Tzich Tzuchei Ziva. Because it's impossible to have this seminal emission without also having some mixed ziva inside of it. And the emission of the zav is mitameh b'maga u'masa. So here, because the Shechvat Zera has included in it the liquid of the zav, that makes it also mitameh b'masa. But the Gemara's comments on that, afilu Rabbi Yeshua lo amar l'mishum tzuchzechei ziva. Exactly what you're pointing out. That Rabbi Yeshua is not saying that Shechvat Zera is mitameh b'masa. He's saying that because Shechvat Zera has Ziva in it, that's why it's Mitameh B'Masa. Ava Be'enei, Lo Amar. But if it was Shechvat Zera alone, he wouldn't say that. So we don't have support for this idea that the Mishnah, when it says Shechvat Zera is Mitama, that it means it's Mitameh B'Masa. That's the additional dimension brought on by the Zav, because we don't have any Tana that supports such an idea. Very good. What you're suggesting is, okay, so read the Mishnah like Rabbi Yoshua. Which is the reason that the Shechvat Zera in the Mishnah is Tameh, is because he's already a Zav. And then in all likelihood, when he had the Shechvat Zera emitted from it, there's probably Tzich Tzuchei Ziva in it. And the rule of Rabbi Yeshua should apply over here. That's maybe what the Mishnah says. So Tosafot over here says, the Shechvat Zera de Matniten Mashma de Af Be'inei. The Shechvat Zera in the Mishnah seems to indicate in any situation. It doesn't make it clear that it's only Shechvat Zera that has Ziva in it, but rather it's any Shechvat Zera is this way. It's not qualified in any way. And so because of that, it seems like even in the case where there is no Tzichtzuchei Ziva, the din would be the same, and that's why the Gemara does not explain the Mishnah the way that Rabbi Yeshua explains it in the Beraita. Ella, Amar of Adabava, the Ma'ar She'en Tolim Ba. What it's come to teach you is that we are not Tole in it. The first half of the Mishnah told us items that would give you a pass and say that whatever you saw now does not qualify as Ziva. And that's because of the requirement that it's Yotzei Mibsaro, that the emission of the Zav has to come from the flesh, from the body itself, and not Machmat Davar Acher, and not because of some stimuli that caused it to come along. One of the items mentioned in the Mishnah is Shechvat Zera, that a person who has a seminal emission will then be discounted in terms of the fact that the Ziva that appears afterwards is not considered to be Ziva. Now the Mishnah doesn't explicitly say Shechvat Zera, but it mentions Hirhur, Mar'eh. So even those items are good enough to eliminate the fact that it's considered to be Ziva. Then certainly, if he had a Shechvat Zera emission, then that would not qualify any longer to be called a Ziva. And that's what is normally the case. But after he's already a Zav, and that's what it's saying here, there's Raglaim Ledavar, if he has a Shechvat Zera sighting now, that will not protect him. If he then has a Ziva emission, we will not assume that it comes Machmat Onus, but rather that's it. That's another Ziva emission, and it will make him into a three sighting Zav. So Savara Papa Kameh Derava LeMeimar, Aidi Chushuhu Dechazi. So here is a machlok between the Mifaresh and Tosafot, how to explain this statement of Rav Papa, and what exactly is, I guess at this point in the Gemara, what's happening over here. The way the Mifaresh explains it is, Sava Rav Papa kameh derav lemeimar, hainu taima dein tolinat ziva b'shechvat zera. This is the reason that we're not tole the ziva in the shechvat zera. Damrinan, aydi chusha shenechlash miziva rishona. Because the reason that he's seeing the shechvat zera now is because he's been weakened by the ziva. Shvar niskak l'tuma, because he was already tamei, and therefore the seminal emission now is a result of his being a zav. And so therefore it's not going to provide you the protective cover that normally shechvat zera provides. Which is that normally we say that the shechvat zera causes a certain physiological change in the body, and because of that physiological change in the body, that is goreim, that the ziva that comes afterwards came about. And that's why it normally exempts you from that being a ziva sighting because of the shechvat zera. But in this instance, the reason that he's having the shechvat zera sighting is because of the fact that he's already weakened by the ziva sighting that happened before. So the shechvat zera now is no longer the cause of the change or the physiological change in the body, but rather a result of the physiological change in the body from the Zav emissions, and that's why it does not provide the protective cover that it normally provides. And that's what the statement of Rav Papa is, according to the Mifresh. Savar Rav Papa kameh derav lemeimar, aydi chushuhu dechazi. The reason that he's seeing the Shechvat Zera now is because he is already in this weakened state. And that's what it means in the Mishnah, she nizkak letuma. Since he's already tamei from the Tumat Zav, the Shechvat Zera sighting that he's having over now is because of that ziva, and therefore the keri now will not provide any protection for him with regards to the ziva that he sees afterwards. So normally when he has the independent sighting of the Shechvat Zera, it would protect him against the ziva afterwards being mitameihim. But now that he saw it after he was already a Zav, then it's happening because of that weakness and it doesn't provide that protection. That's the way that the Mifresh explains it. And then Amalei Rova, Vatanan, Ger Shinitya Gayer, if you have a convert who is converting, Mitame Miyad B'Ziva, he's able to be Mitame immediately in Ziva. Now, it's a case where the Goy had a seminal emission prior to his conversion, and then immediately after his conversion, he has a Ziva sighting. So, normally for a Jew, if that was the case, the Shechvat Zera would provide cover for the Ziva that comes afterwards. But yet here for the Goy, it doesn't happen that way. Now, as the Mefarish points out, it has to be a case where the ger is already mahul, where he already has a brit milah. Because if not, if he just had a brit milah, then he goes under the qualification of the Mishnah of choli. Someone who's sick and then has a zavi mission, it doesn't count as zibah because he was sick. So a milah would be no worse than being sick and would provide him that protection. So it's a case where he was already mahul. The only thing he had to do was convert. So now when he converts, now you have the ziva sighting afterwards. And the ziva sighting afterwards, we say, is not covered or protected by the shechvat zera that he saw before. So what you see from this is that it has nothing to do with strength or weakness. There is a gzeret hakatuv, which tells you that ziva is ziva. And when it's after shechvat zera, it's not. When it's before the shechvat zera, then it is qualified as ziva, and the shechvat zera won't give you that protection. Nothing to do with weakness of the body or why it came about, because otherwise it should protect the ger now. Because he had a sighting of shechvat zera right beforehand, then it should provide him cover for the ziva. Very good. So right, that would work if you say the reason behind this is gzeret hakatuv, or the reason behind this is that the rules are that if shechvat zera comes first, then it affects the ziva, but if the ziva comes first, it affects the shechvat zera. That all works fine, and you could argue that it's not relevant to the goy, because it's not a physiological issue, it's simply a halakhic issue. And since he was a goy before, it doesn't apply to him. But now that Rav Papa entered the possibility that the reason behind this is to do with the physiological changes in the body, then it should be irrelevant whether you're Jewish or not Jewish, because it has to do with the weakness of the body or the strength of the body, nothing to do with any halachic reason. The ziva happened after he converted already. So he's only becoming tamei for something that happened after he converted, but it should be influenced by the weakness that's created by the shechvat zera beforehand. So over here, v'ha'ha'cha d'leka chulsha. So in this case, for the mifarish, you don't have any physiological weakness, and so therefore the carry that you saw beforehand should be a reason to say that the ziva that's seen afterwards is not really ziva. And again, if it's a halachic issue, you're right. The fact that he was a goy beforehand should not then have any bearing on the case. But now that Republic explains it has to do with the physiological state of the body, then when he's a goy or he's a Jew, the same facts should be true. The fact that it's not makes it sound like what Rava is saying to Rapapa is, this has nothing to do with the weakness of the body. It has nothing to do with the strength of the body, but rather these are halachic realities, and we'll see why in a second. The Gemara will explain what they are, but the factors here are halachic and not physiological. So Rapapa responds to him and says, Amalei, in the chachogli godomize. There's no greater weakness than the conversion. The conversion itself is a choli, and therefore, the shechvat zera that he saw right before he was converting was because of the weakness of his body from the conversion. And that's why it does not provide the protective cover for the ziva that comes afterwards. And we have an example of this, that ein lecha choli gadol mizeh, in terms of conversion, which is in the famous story between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. When Rabbi Yochanan is trying to convince Rish Lakish to join the forces of Torah, he sees Rish Lakish jumping from the banks of the Kinneret onto the boat and back and forth these very large distances. And he says to Rish Lakish, Chelcha le'oraita, your strength should be for Torah. And then they have their exchange, and Rabbi Yochanan promises his sister to Rish Lakish. And then Rish Lakish accepts to become a Talmid Chacham and to begin delving into Torah. And then immediately he's unable to do the same jump that he did before. And that's what they say, that the Kabbalat of the old Torah weakened him to the point where it had a physiological impact. He was, again, weakened by the Torah. And so too over here, you see a similar facet of this conversion process when he accepts the Ol Mitzvot. And he's nichnas the Ol Mitzvot in the Chacholi Gadol Mizeh. There's no greater sickness than this. Now obviously, again, it's a case where he was already Mahul. If we're talking about a Milah, for sure, this Choli Zeh. But here's the case, even without Milah, the Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot generates the Choli. And that's why the Shechvat Zera that he sees at that time is meaningless, because it's because of the weakness of the body, not because the Shechvat Zera would then impact on the Ziva afterwards. Alright, that's the way that the Mefarish learns it. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot and the Rosh similarly learns this, that the Savara Papa is coming to explain why is Pekeri Poter the Ziva Habacharav Kol me'ed le'et? Because the reason is that we have to think that it's machmat chalishut nitrokein min ha'shech v'zerahu, the chaza, karikan mibsaro v'lo machmat onso. So that the problem is not about the way that, not the way the Mefresh explained, which is that Rav Papa is trying to explain why you had a seminal mission. And then because of that, why it doesn't affect the ziva, but rather, the Baal HaTosafot also would say, Rav Papa is coming to explain why, when you have a ziva sighting after Sheikh Vatzera, why is it that that's not considered to be ziva? And he says, Mipnei Chusha. It has to do with the weakness. The seminal mission creates a weakness in the body. And that weakness in the body is what's generating the emission, the zav emission, and not the fact that it's mibsaro, it's coming out of his flesh. And therefore, that's a protective cover for you because your weakness is what generated the zav flow. But just like choli and all the other things listed in the Mishnah, if you have these external stimuli that create the flow of ziva, they don't count. So too, Sheikh Vatzera has that same impact. But after he's already in his gak letumah, already, after he's already a Zav, we no longer worry about these external stimuli because there's already overwhelming evidence that this guy is having Zav emissions. It's not being caused by these external stimuli. It's because he's having a Zav emission. And so that's what's meant over here. And basically, Rav Papa is Rav Adar Bava. He's saying the same thing as Rav Adar Bava, but just explaining why. Why is it that we're not toleh in the Sheikh Vatzera afterwards? Because normally we're toleh because the Sheikh Vatzera is a sign of choli, of weakness, and that's what's causing the ziva to appear. Over here, it's not meaningful because he already had two sightings beforehand, and that means that what he's seeing now is most likely a sighting and has nothing to do with the physiological change in his body. It has to do with the fact that he's been having these sightings all along. But then, is that really true? Amalei Rava, is that really true what you're saying? When a ger converts, he is mitamei yad b'ziva, ve'ein lecha choli gadol mizeh. Not that that's the answer to the question from Rav Papa to Rava, but rather it's part of Rava's question. Why is it that a ger, shenit gayer, is tamei b'ziva immediately afterwards? He's an individual who is weak and sickened. And according to you, that's enough of a dispensation to say that the ziva that's seen afterwards is not considered to be ziva. So why is that the case? Amai. So that's what you can see in Tosfot. He says, hachar gasin and v'amai. All of this is part of Rava's statement. Why is this true by the ger? Because and then the Gemara's answer is, Elo, Tanai. It's a machloket Tanai. Now for the Mefaresh and for the Tosafot, the Elo here is different. They both agree that in the explanation of our Mishnah is now going to be, but the Gemara is now rejecting the explanation now, that a Betolimba, going back to the original explanation, which is it's Tumat Masa. That the Mishnah is talking about Tumat Masa. The only question is, the Machloket Tanaim here, what is that explaining? Because the Mefaresh and Tosafot have different views about what the discussion between Rav Papa and Rav was about. Elo Tanaihi, it's a Machloket Tanaim, the Tanya. Sheikh Vatzera Shel Zav Mitamei B'Masa. Sheikh Vatzera V'Zav is Mitamei B'Masa, call me 8 to 8. Anything within the 24-hour period. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yomo. It's only in that day itself. So now, according to the Balei Tosafot, Klomar, the Rav Ada and Rav Papa leta. Gemara is rejecting now Rav Ada and Rav Papa's explanation. The reason that Keri provides protection by the Ziva has nothing to do with weakness, nothing to do with physiological. It's completely halachic. And that's the answer to the question by the Ger. The reason that the Ger is not impacted here is because he's not subject to halachic reasons. And so therefore, by the Ger, as soon as he converts, he becomes a Zav, even though he had Keri sighting right before, because he's not afforded that protection. He doesn't have the Gzerat HaKatuv. On the other hand, the Yisrael is provided that protection, and that means that if he has a Sheikh Vatzera sighting, even after he is already a Zav, even if there is Tamei, the Sheikh Vatzera will provide him protection for, depending on here, you have Machloket Tanaim, whether it's for 24 hours or until sunset on that day, but he's provided protection that any sighting of Ziva that he has at that point in time will not be deemed to be a Zav emission. If they're physiological, for physiological reasons, then the ger shenit gayer would be covered by them, and the ziva that he sees is not going to be considered ziva. Sheikh Vatzera, which is all gzeret hakatuv now, will not affect it. The way that the Rosh expresses it here on the Amud Bet is v'dafka b'Yisrael shekiryo tamei avoy kuchavim shekiryo tahor enu mitaher ziva. If it's gzeret hakatuv, then only if your carry is tamei does it provide you this protection from the gzeret hakatuv. But if your carry is not tamei, it doesn't provide you that protection because he was a goy when it happened, and therefore Tuman Tara were not shayach by him. So the way Tosfot is explaining it is now the Gemara is rejecting Rav Adar Ba'av and Rav Papa's explanation that Keri provides protection because of the weakness in the body, but rather it's a gzeirat ha-katuv. And therefore it applies whether you were already a Zav, before you're a Zav, anytime you have this sighting, this Sheik Vazera, it protects you. It applies broadly. So then, what's the meaning in the Mishnah? And the Sheik Vazera of the Mishnah is not talking about a case of Ziva, Ella, it's the way we were explaining it originally, that the Sheik Vazera is Tamei B'Masa. And that's a unique aspect of Sheik Vazera, after he's already a Zav, is that it's not only Tamei B'Maga, but it's Tamei B'Masa. So that's the way Tosfot explains what we're doing right now. On the other hand, the Mifareish, who said that the Shechvat Zera, or the explanation of Rav Papa here, was telling you why, when you have a sighting of Shechvat Zera, while he's a Zav already, why does that not count towards protecting you from your Ziva, is because you're already weak from the Zav emissions. And since you're weak from the Zav emissions, the Shechvat Zera doesn't provide you the cover that it normally would. So then, what's the Gemara's Ela Tanayehi? He says Ela Elkai. That's not about here what Rav Papa and Rav are saying, but it's going up above. That after, up above we said, we don't find any Tana who says that there is Tuma, Shechvat Zera, B'Masa. He says, no, we do, we have another Tanaim. So according to Tosafot, the Gemara now completely rejected the reasoning of Rav Papa and Rav Adar Ba'ava, and then goes on to explain that it's a Gezera Takatuf. According to the Mifareish, the Gemara is not rejecting Rav Papa and Rav Adar Ba'ava. That's a Mamar Musgar. What they said is correct. But the Gemara now is saying is that what you said before, that it can't be talking about Masa in the Mishnah because there's no such thing as Tumat Masa by Shechvat Zera, that happens to be a Machloket Tanaim. Because we have another Machloket Tanaim that shows you that even without Tzuchei Ziva, that there is a Gzeret HaKatuv, that there is Tumat Masa by Shechvat Zera when it's in the context of Zav. Right, so that's the way that the Mefaresh will explain it. For the Mifareish, we now have two ways to explain the Mishnah, possibly. One of them is the way that Rav Adar Ba'ava and Rav Papa explained it, which is that she'ein tolim ba, that if you see Shechvat Zera after you're a Zav already, it will not provide you the cover that it normally does. Or you could also explain it as that the Shechvat Zera here is mitamei b'masa, not like normal, where it's only mitamei b'maga. And either one of those explanations will be a viable explanation. According to Tosafot, we reject the Rav Papa and Rav Adar Ba'ava. And the only viable explanation of the Mishnah is that Shechvat Zera is mitamei b'tumat masa. So now, what's the machloket? The Tanya, Shechvat Zera shel zav mitamei masa, kol mi'eit me'eit, that's for 24 hours. B'yosi yomer yomo, that only for that day itself. B'mai kamiflegei. What is their machloket? B'dishmuel, machloket in Shmuel. D'shmuel, Rami Ktiv, Shmuel says that the Pasuk says, ki ebecha ish asher lo yeh tohor mikre laylo, uchtiv, lefnot erev yechatz b'mayim. That right before nightfall, he'll go into the mikveh. Mandamar mi'ed le'eit, the one who says that it's a 24-hour period, that it has this effect, dayeg, he's mid-dayeg mi'lifnot erev. So, mi'lifnot erev, the different ways to explain it, the way the Mifareish explains it is, mi'lifnot erev mashma bet aravim. Mi'lifnot erev makes it sound like there's two erevs here. Lifnot chad erev mashma, that's one of the two. V'haydechtiv erev, hainu neremi erev achrina. So that you have here what seemingly is milifnot, which is milifnot erev, and then has the word erev again. So that means there's two aravim. That means me'eit le'eit. How do you have two aravim? You have it from me'eit le'eit. That's how the Mifareish explains it. The Balei Tosfot explained it, milifnot erev is similar to by Yom HaKippurim when we say mi erev ad erev. So milifnot erev is, means in a similar vein of mi erev ad erev, from evening to evening. That means that you have a 24-hour period. V'idach da'ik mikre lailo. And the other one is mitayik from the fact that it says mikre lailo, which means until the laila. That's it. Laila is the end of it. The Rosh explains this more in detail, that the reason that they are doresh the pasuk in this way is because ki ebecha ish asher lo yeh tahor. The person is already not tahor. Why is he already not tahor? Because he's a zav. Then mikre lailo. On top of that, he has a mikre lailo. He has a seminal emission. So now the seminal emission in the context of Zav has this din. That it will be lifnot erev, that he will have me'erevet erev, he will have this additional level of tuma associated with his shechvat zeres. That's the way that they explain the sukim to come to the understanding that we're talking about a case of a Zav with the shechvat zera, not just a plain case of shechvat zera. So Iman Damar Miliknot Erev Haktiv Mikre Laila. The one who says that Miliknot Erev, it's 24 hours, what about the fact that it says Mikre Laila? Urcha Dekeri, the Machir Belaila. That's just the pasuk speaking about the normal situation. Most people have a seminal mission at night. The reason it says Mikre Laila is because that's the normal time that you would have such an incident. But not because it's telling you any halachic information. Now, the Gemara doesn't ask the other way around, which is, according to the one who says Mikre Laila, what does he do with Lifnot Erev? So again, here you can explain it one of two ways. You can say, Dibrei HaKatuv Bilveh, Lifnot Erev, just the way that it is, that normally a person, Lifnot Erev, goes to the mikveh, and that's right before the sunset. And again, that's Dibrei HaKatuv, is just the normal circumstance. Another Tosafot over here suggests that it is, Benir Lamar, Deidach Toresh, Lifnot Erev, Kedirashinu B'Sifri, to carry poter ziva shalacharea komi 8 to 8. That he learns it like the sifrei, that the 8th erev comes to teach you that the carry also exempts the ziva for 24 hours afterwards. And that's what the Rosh explains over here, that the Rosho from the Sukkim over here actually has a dual mandate, which is that it explains both the case of zav, then shichvatzera, and shichvatzera, and then zav. So in a case where you have Zav first and then the Shechvat Zerah, the Zav will influence the Tumah of the Shechvat Zerah. The Shechvat Zerah will not only be Mitameh b'maga, but also be Masa for this duration. The same is true in the reverse, which is, if a person has a sighting of Shechvat Zerah, how much time does it protect you from the Zav emission that you see afterwards, that it won't be deemed a Zav emission? And the same thing will apply here, that it may be late for 24 hours. And that's what he's darshan from Lifnot Erev. Lifnot Erev is not teaching you that there's Tuma'ah for 24 hours of the Shechvat Zerah, but rather only until nightfall. What does he do with the Lifnot Erev 24 hours? Means that Shechvat Zerah will protect you for the next 24 hours. If you have a Zavi mission, we'll blame it on the Shechvat Zerah and say that it's not a Zavi mission. And so therefore, the machloket here within the interpretation of the Psukim has meaning in both sides of this, that both the Shechvat Zerah protecting the Zavi mission is a Gzeret HaKatuv, as well as the fact that the Shechvat Zerah after a Zavi mission has Tumat Masa is also a Gzeret HaKatuv, and they both derive from the interpretation of these Psukim. So now the Mishnah, which we'll finish off the Masechta, the Mishnah, it includes a Nagadic interpretation, which is generally the way that the Masechta will end. What's interesting over here is that the Mishnah does not belong here. The Mishnah belongs back in Perek Aleph, where we discuss the different types of Nazirim. And there we discuss the Nazir of Shalom. Over here you have the Nazirut of Shmuel, and should have been discussed there. The Tosfot Yom Tov claims that the Rabbi left it till here because there's a Machloket in the Mishnah, and therefore he didn't want to put it in the beginning of the Masechta, which is interesting. Although the more likely scenario, again, is that it has Divrei Agadah, and Rabbi wanted to end off the Masechta with Divrei Agadah. Nazir haya Shmuel kedivrei Rabbi Nohurai. So now, the Mishnah is structured interesting. It doesn't say Rabbi Nohai Omer, that Nazir haya Shmuel, that Shmuel was a Nazir, but it makes a definitive statement that Shmuel was a Nazir. And that's similar to what Rabbi Nohurai says, which actually makes it give more support to the position of Rabbi Nohurai. And the Rambam Paskins, we'll see, like Rabbi Nohurai, in the Perush HaMishnayot over here, he tells you that there are actually halach ramifications to the machloket here in the Mishnah. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, with regards to Chana, when she is speaking to Hashem, she says, Umora lo yaleh al rosho, that there will be no razor that touches his head. So what does that mean, that no razor will touch his head? Chana dedicates the child that she will bear to Hashem. She says, if you listen to me, Hashem, and grant me a child, in return, I will dedicate that child to you. And that's why she brings Shmuel up. After she weans him, she brings him up to the Mishkan and leaves him with Eli in the Mishkan because he's dedicated, a life dedicated to Hashem. In part, as part of that, she says, "Umura lo yale al rosho," that no razor will touch his head. Nemar b'Shimshon, by Shimshon it says, "Umura," right? Lo yale al rosho, by Shimshon it also says, "Ki nizir elukim yeh nar min haboten," that he will be a nizir elukim from birth. And also there, Mora lo yale al rosho, and there will be no razor will touch his head. So the association between the word Mora by Shimshon and Nazir will say the same thing by Shmuel, even though there is no explicit reference to a Nazir. The fact that it uses the term Mora is, and we'll call it an agadic Gzeir Shova, which tells us that the Mora lo yale al rosho of Shmuel also means that he is a Nazir. So ma mora amura b'shimshon Nazir. Af mora amura b'shmuel Nazir. That is the interpretation of Rabbi Nohurai, which supports this contention that Shmuel was a Nazir. Am Rabbi Yossi, halo ein mora elo shel basar v'dam. When we're talking about mora over here, we're talking about fear of man. And what Chana is saying is, mora lo yale al rosho, that no fear of man will be on his head. He'll be afraid of no one. And that's the thing that she is saying to Hashem, that he is dedicated to Hashem, therefore, he will not be afraid of any other man. No other man will cause him to be fearful. Now, whether that means that he's interpreting the word mora here to mean, even though it's spelled with a hey, to mean mora with an aleph, which means to fear, or whether he's interpreting the word mora over here from the word marut, to exercise control, ownership, balut over something, mora lo yala rosho, no one else will have control over him, no one else will have that balut over him, and that's how he's interpreting the word mora. But either way, he's saying that the meaning of the word mora here is not a razor, but rather a fear. Or you could connect the two. That a mora, a razor, causes fear. It causes fear not because of the way that we think of a razor, that it causes fear. It causes the hair to be fearful, because when the hair sees the razor, it knows it's going to be taken off. So you could connect, language-wise, you could connect, like Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch would do with words like this, which have a similar etymology, even though they're slightly different, which is you have a hay or an aleph, but they come or derive from the same conceptual idea, which is that of fear. Amalei Rabbi Nohurai, Rabbi Nohurai responds to Rabbi Yossi, well, if what you're saying is true, then it didn't work. Halo kvar ne'amar, doesn't it say, Vayomer Shmuel, Ech Elech v'shama Sha'ul v'aregeni? So Shmuel has to go to speak to David. He's afraid to go to speak to David, because if Sha'ul gets wind of this, he's going to kill Shmuel. So then he makes up an excuse that he's going to bring a korban, and he comes up with a ploy to deceive Shaul. But the fact that he has to come up with a ploy to deceive Shaul means that he's afraid of Shaul. And that means that there is mora al rosho. Shavar ya alav mora shel basar v'dam. He does have fear of mankind. And therefore the tefillah chana, the assumption being that the tefillah chana was accepted because she had a child. And that means whatever she stipulated with regards to the child also came true. And part of that stipulation would be that he would be fearful of no man. The fact that the pasuk says he's afraid of Sheol would then undermine the fact that he is not fearful of man. And therefore Rabbi Nohurai says that cannot be the right interpretation of the pasuk. I mentioned before that the Rambam says that there's a halachic nafkamina to this Agadic Mishnah, which is that the Rambam says if a person says, Hareini Kishmuel, or Hareini Kiben Chana, that person becomes a Nazir. But not only a Nazir, but a Nazir Olam. Because Shmuel was a Nazir Olam. And since he's a Nazir Olam, if you accept a Nazirut through Hatpasah, through using Shmuel's name, then that person becomes a Nazir Olam. And that's the nafkamina here of Rabbi Nohurai's position, that since Shmuel was a Nazir, someone who accepts a Nazirut through Shmuel, first of all, it works. But not only does it work, but it also makes you into a Nazir Olam, because that's what Shmuel was. Shmuel was a Nazir Olam. So the Rambam seemingly paskins like Rabbi Nohurai over Rabbi Yossi, even though generally the halacha is ki Rabbi Yossi. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi paskins like Rabbi Nohurai, and that might be influenced by the fact that it says Nazir Haya Shmuel. That's a Stam Mishnah. Kedivrei Rabbi Nohurai. And then Rabbi adds in, oh, that's like Rabbi Nohurai. So that, instead of saying the standard Rabbi Nohurai Omer, which would have made it then a Dat Yachid, Rabbi makes it into a Dam, adds in that Rabbi Nohurai also supports that position to give more power to that position, and the Rambam himself paskins that way that Shmuel was a Nazir, which has halachic ramifications. Amarle Rav the Chia Brei. Rav said to Chia, his son, Chatof Ubarich, grab it and make the bracha. Which is, here we're talking about the kos shel Birkat HaMazon, the Birkat HaZimon. You should be quick to bench and be the one who leads the benching with the kos shel bracha. The word Chatof is used also by, for instance, the afikoman. The word chatof means to grab it quickly, to snatch it away. Here, probably because in general, when it comes to dvarim shel kavod, we normally ask you to demur when someone comes. You should say, no, it's not for me. You should push away. One shouldn't accept kavod right away. Over here, he's saying to him, grab it by the reins and you do it. Do the zimun. Chenamalei Rav Huna the Rabba Bray, and Rav Huna made the same suggestion to Rabba his son. Chatof Ubarich. Grab it and you be the leader of the benching. Lememra. Why would they say such a thing? It must be because the mevarech adif. The one who leads is better than the one who responds. So seemingly, the reason that they're giving this advice to their children is, you want to be the mevarech. And since you want to be the mevarech to gain, to garner that better schar, then you should run to do it, and don't wait for someone to ask you, or don't wait to demur in these cases, just do it. The Rosh says, by the way, that v'chein kol brachot ayikad mucha acher. It's not just by benching, it's true of all brachot, and you should be the one who makes the bracha, because of that zchut. V'atanya, is that really true that the mevarech is greater? Don't we have a braita that says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, godol o'ne amein yoter min ha-mevarech? Greater is the one who answers amein than from the one who makes the bracha. That could be for a number of reasons, possibly because the individual now gets both things. When he answers amein, he both gets the bracha because of shomea kone, and he gets to answer amein. He has a double credit versus the mevarech, who can only make the bracha but cannot answer amein. So that's one reason why the one amein might be greater. The other possibility is that the one amein is greater is because he's able to have more kavanah. The mevarech was actually articulating the bracha, has to focus on the words, has to focus on a tune, he has to focus on the way that he's saying it. So he might lose some kavanah here. The one who is answering amein gets to hear the bracha and has the ability to have full kavanah when he answers amein, and that's why he is greater. Vamalei Rabbi Nehorai, Hashemayim kach hu. So here we have another statement for Rabbi Nehorai, which is probably why this is brought in the Gemara over here, because we have Rabbi Nehorai who appears in the Mishnah. Now we have Rabbi Nehorai here who appears in this context of the discussion that we're having over here. Hashemayim kachu. You're right. Teda, shahal hasharei golarim mitgarim b'milchama v'giborim notzchim. So that the golarim are the ones who start the war, but it is the giborim that are the victors in the battle. The way that the Mefarash explains golarim are the weaker ones. You have the weaker ones that begin the battle, and then the giborim come and do the cleanup. They finish up, and they're the victors in the battle. Regular troops go in, and then the giborim come, and they finish it off, and they're the ones who are granted the victory, or they're ones that are assigned the victory. So too, the one who answers amein is greater than the mevarech, the one who brings closure. So that might be the third reason as to why one amein is greater than the mevarech, is because he's the closure. And the one who is the closure, he gets all the credit. The same thing with the giborim, the way that Tosafot explains it, that the giborim here refers to the parashim, the cavalry. So first you send in the infantry, and then the cavalry comes afterwards, and the cavalry again is credited with the victory. But you see here that it's, even though the main battle is done by the regular troops or the infantry, nevertheless, it's always the cleanup that is credited with the victory. And so to hear the answering amein is credited with the mitzvah, not the one who is the mivarech. We seem to have a braita that is against the position of Rav and Rav Huna's advice that they're giving to their children. The Gemara answers up, Tanaehi, it is a makloka Tanaim, and these Amoraim are sumeich on this other braita, which is the Tanya. Echad mevarech, v'echad one amein, v'mashma. Mevarech and one amein seem to be on equal footing. The way that the Mefresh explains it is that because it derives from the pasuk, Gadlul Hashem iti, uneroma mashmo yachdav. Gadlul Hashem iti is the mevarech. Is that we will elevate the name of Hashem together is the one amein. But Ella, shemimaharim the mevarech tchila. The mevarech gets rewarded first, and that's because of the nature of the pasuk. The pasuk says first, gadlul Hashem iti, and then uneroma mashmo yachdav. So the mevarech is credited first. I would suggest also that the way it is gadlul Hashem iti. That's the mevarech. Uneroma mashmo yachdav means together we elevate the name of Hashem, which means that the mevarech is also credited with the amein of the one who answers amein, because he's the one who generated the amein, he's the one who caused the amein. And that's uneroma mashmo yachdav. He's also getting credit for that as well. But because of that, he is getting rewarded faster, or Hashem responds to that faster. So there is then a value in being the mevarech versus the one who is saying amein. They relied on this braita to suggest or to give advice to their sons to grab the coast of Birkat HaMazon to be the first to be mevarech in this case. So now the Gemara adds in the normal agadic end to a mesechta, even though here it seems slightly strange because the Gemara already ended off on a nice agadic interpretation. And it doesn't need this. And usually you do this either when it's ending off with halacha, or it's ending off with something that's not so happy, then it adds in this ending. But over here, again, even though we've had both of those things, we ended off with a nice note, and we ended off with a gadata, it still adds in this last line, which is, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Talmidei Chachamim, Marbim Shalom Be'olam, that the Talmidei Chachamim cause there to be more peace in the world, Shenemar, B'chol Banayich Limudei Hashem, Ram Shalom Banayich, right, all of the Banayich Hashem that learn, B'Rav Shalom Banayich, and they cause, don't call them your children, but rather Bonayich, the builders. And the builders refer to those that are learning Torah. And they are credited with bringing Shalom to the world. You could connect it back to the Mishnah, which says that Nazir Hayah Shmuel, but Shmuel was also a Shofet. And that's when the people ask for a king, Shmuel gets upset and says to them, all these years I've been going around and traveling around and adjudicating your cases and bringing peace. What do you need a king for? What's wrong with what you have right now? You see that Shmuel had this side to him that he was someone who brought about peace and that he was a shofet. And maybe that's why the Gemara in particular brings this Agadic interpretation of Shalom from Talmidei Chachamim associated with Shmuel. Okay, with that, we end the Masechet Nazir. Hadran Alach Hakutim, Ein Lahem Nizirut, Uslika La Masechet Nazir.